You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Today I will talk about the Palestinians of Iraq. This is the smallest group of the Palestinian refugees in the Arab world. There is an estimation that the total number of the Palestinians who fled, who were expelled from Palestine in 1948 and ended up in Iraq by late 48 or early 49, were no more than 4,000 Palestinians. The majority of them came from three villages near Haifa: Ijzim, Ain Ghazal, and Jaba'a. So these three villages, known among the Palestinian Iraqis as the Triangle, form 80% or even more of the total population of the Palestinian Iraqis. Haifa, along with other cities in 48, were under the terrorism of the Zionist groups. They attacked the civilians, the most atrocious, the most infamous massacre took place in May 48 in the village near Haifa called Tantura village. I want you to remember the name. There are enough resources in English about this massacre, including a film that brought exclusive archive from Zionist archive about militiamen who admitted and described the atrocities of the massacre. So the name of that village is Tantura, T-A-N-T-O-O-R-A, Tantura. So this Tantura village near Haifa is one example of the violence against the Palestinians, not just around Haifa, but also across Palestine. The news of the massacre spread quickly, and mind you that this massacre came nearly a month after another infamous massacre near Jerusalem, which is Deir Yassin massacre. Here we're talking about within 1 year, more than 50 massacres at the hands of the Zionist terrorist groups against civilians, entirely civilian Palestinians. So these massacres, the news of the massacre, made the civilians flee. And they went in different directions, and our group went to the south, to the Palestinian, internally displaced Palestinian city of Jenin. Jenin happened to be under the administration of the Iraqi army that entered Palestine. So when the war was over, the Iraqi army was prepared to return. There is one story that says that the mother of the king, the last king of Iraq, King Faisal II, was sympathetic to the widows and elderly women, and she told the Iraqi army to come and bring with them some of the women who were left with no support. So this is the core of what later became the Palestinian Iraqi population. Within 1 year, the nearly 4,000 became maybe 5,000 or 6,000 people, when their other members of the families joined them, having lost hope of returning to Palestine. Now, in terms of their legal status in Iraq when they arrived, they were given the guests status. So this created an administrative or legal vacuum in terms of their status, residency status in Iraq. They were not given anything. They were not given IDs, travel documents, passports. I think the assumption in Iraq, alongside the other Arab countries, that the presence of the Palestinians, refugees, will not be long. So they did not feel the need to issue them passports or IDs or paperwork upon arrival. And it took them years until they realized that they need to create some sort of paperwork. In Iraq, it was one of the longest gaps, because it was until 1958, 10 years later, when the monarchy came to an end, there was a bloody coup that ended the Iraqi monarchy, and there was the birth of the republic. The first president was Abdelkarim Qasim. One of the earliest decisions was to set up a department in Iraq to arrange the situation and status of the Palestinians in Iraq. And by then, we're talking 10 years after Nakba, the population of the Palestinians became nearly 15,000 or maybe fewer than that. But there was the beginning of the Department for the Palestinian Affairs in Iraq, and that's in 1958. So the first 10 years of their presence in Iraq, the majority of them, with few exceptions, were not given any form of IDs or paperwork or travel documents or passports, which means that the majority were denied travel, whether to the Arab countries or the rest of the world. So the change of regime made the Iraqi governments feel the need to correct their residency status. They set up a department for the Palestinian refugees in 58, and within 2 to 3 years, they started issuing them the first travel documents. So in 1961, they were given Iraqi travel documents. And again, these are not passports, because again, the Arab League decided not to give the Palestinian refugees in the Arab countries citizenship status, and to maintain their refugee status for fear of resettlement. And resettlement was seen as the opposite of the right of return. There was an assumption, I don't want to use words that could be harsher than this, there was an assumption that if the Palestinians in Lebanon or in Iraq or Syria or Egypt became citizens, that they will forget Palestine and will choose to forego their right of return. So for that not to happen, then we maintain the refugee status, and then they will be returning to Palestine when Palestine is liberated. Now, this is the pretext of late 50s and 61, that the Palestinians in four of the Arab countries were denied access to equal rights, to citizenship rights, but it varies from one country to another. The general atmosphere in Iraq in late 50s, early 60s, and then onwards is pan-Arab. The Palestinians were seen as equal when it comes to education, to employment, to housing, and this is to the credit of the Iraqi governments. They were not discriminated against in the majority of the aspects of life in Iraq. The same thing happened to the Palestinians of Syria. The Syrian government, the Syrian society, the Syrian state in the 50s treated the Palestinians on equal footing when it comes to education, medical support, employment, and property ownership. The only thing that they were not equally treated is the passports. So the situation of the Palestinians in Iraq started to improve because they were treated equally. And the same goes with the Palestinians of Syria. However, the Palestinians of Lebanon had a different pathway. We spoke about it last week and we might return to it later. And they were denied access to a long list of rights, including employment. Until today, there is a blacklist of around 70 professions that the Palestinians of Lebanon cannot even apply for, let alone to be accepted. So their situation varies from one country to other, but the four Arab countries where the majority of Palestinian refugees live, and that's Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, and Iraq, did not give them citizenship. They gave them para passport or travel document. In Arabic, we call it al-wathiqa, wathiqa, for document. So the situation of the Palestinians of Iraq started to improve. However, Iraq itself, as a republic, as a state, in the 60s, took a very serious turn into instability, into political turmoil, with one coup after the other. And then in 1963, a turning point for both Iraq and Syria, and the arrival of al-Ba'ath party to power in Iraq and Syria. This is a nationalist party that calls for pan-Arabism and unity among the Arab countries. And you would think that they came to power in these two countries, that there will be, they will put their theories into action. But because of a long list of reasons, including personal agendas, there was a split in the leadership of al-Ba'ath party between Iraq and Syria. So we started to witness the Syrian Ba'ath and the Iraqi Ba'ath, with rivalry and animosity growing year after year between them, that reflected negatively on the population and the region. So the Palestinians, when their circumstances or conditions started to improve, the situation in Iraq started to deteriorate. And however, by the late 60s, al-Ba'ath party in Iraq managed to hold the grips of power, and that itself brought stability. So for the first time, Iraq started witnessing some sort of political stability and nationalizing natural resources, especially oil, and then the economy started to boom. In Iraq in the 70s, this is the good old days. In Iraq is the 70s. This is the golden decade from 1970 until the beginning of Iraq-Iran war in early 80s. So when it comes to the Palestinians, they started witnessing the improvement. Like the rest of Iraqis, there were education, employment, and they were seen among other refugees as better off. So if you compare the economic situation of the Palestinian refugees in Iraq to their counterparts in other Arab countries, they were doing better in general. I will come back after the break with more about the Palestinians of Iraq. And for now, let's take a break, and I'm going to share with you a segment from Tarab Ensemble's concert last Sunday at Brunswick Ballroom, where we read an excerpt of a poem written by Mahmoud Darwish describing the last night before leaving Granada for the last time, marking the 500-year anniversary in 1992 of the fall of Granada, Granada. So I read the Arabic, and my stepdaughter Lean read the English in the music background. Double bass, Michael Curry. Flute, Sarah MacDonald. The poem is called 11 Planets Since the Last Andalusi Scene.
Hi, this is Rafif Ziada, and you're listening to 3CR Pro-Palestinian Happily Proud Radio.
في المساء الأخير على هذه الأرض نقطع أيامنا عن شجيراتنا ونعد الضلوع التي سوف نحملها معنا والضلوع التي سوف نتركها ها هنا في المساء الأخير لا نودع شيئا ولا نجد الوقت كي ننتهي كل شيء يظل على حاله فالمكان يبدل أحلامنا ويبدل زواره فجأة لم نعد قادرين على السخرية فالمكان معد لكي يستضيف الهباء
On the last evening on this earth cut our days from our trees and count the rips we will carry along, and the rips we will leave behind right here on the last evening. We bid farewell to nothing. We don't find the time to end who we are. Everything remains the same. The place exchanges our dreams and exchanges its visitors. Suddenly, we are incapable of satire, since the place is ready to host the dust.
هنا في المساء الأخير نتملى الجبال المحيطة بالغيم، فتح وفتح مضاد، وزمان قديم يسلم هذا الزمان الجديد مفاتيح أبوابنا. فادخلوا أيها الفاتحون، فادخلوا أيها الفاتحون منازلنا، واشربوا خمرنا من موشحنا السهل. فالليل نحن إذا انتصف الليل، فالليل نحن إذا انتصف الليل. لا فجر يحمله فارس قادم من نواحي الأذان الأخير.
Here on the last evening, we contemplate mountains surrounding clouds, a conquest and a counter-conquest, and a nation time handing over our door keys to the new time. So enter, you conquerors. Enter our homes and drink our wine out of our simple muwashah. We are the night when midnight comes. No horseman carries the dawn from the ways of the final azan.
شاينا أخضر ساخن فاشربوه، وفستقنا طازج فكلوه، والأسرة خضراء من خشب الأرز، فاستسلموا للنعاس بعد هذا الحصار الطويل، وناموا على ريش أحلامنا. الملاءات جاهزة والعطور على الباب جاهزة، والمرايا كثيرة فادخلوها لنخرج منها تماما. وعما قليل سنبحث عما كان تاريخنا حول تاريخكم في البلاد البعيدة، وسنسأل أنفسنا في النهاية، هل كانت الأندلس ها هنا أم هناك، على الأرض أم في القصيدة؟
Our tea is hot and green, so drink it. Our pistachio fresh, so eat it. And our beds are cedar green, so surrender to sleepiness. After this long siege, sleep on the feathers of our dreams. The sheets are ready. The perfume by the door is ready. And the mirrors are many for you to enter them so we can leave them entire. In a little while, we will search for what was our history around your history in the distant lands and ask ourselves in the end, was the Andalus right here or over there, on earth or in the poem?
Listening to Palestine remembered on 855 AM. In the 80s, Iraq and Iran were in a very long war that lasted more than 8 years. That war resulted in the killing of 1 million Iranians and Iraqis in the destruction and in turmoil, the Palestinians of Iraq, while they did not have to be sent to the battlefields, but they also, like the other Iraqis, endured the ramifications of living under war. But also the 80s was the time of economic stability, at least. Iraqis in the 80s maintained high standards, high living standards. They were having holidays in Europe. Middle class Iraqis were able to go to London. They were able to earn. The Palestinians of Iraq also were maintained their good economic situation. So it's just the war. If you just survive the military aspect of the war, socially, politically, economically, Iraq was stable. But the disaster happened on August the 2nd, 1990, when Saddam invaded Kuwait, and the ramifications of that was sanctions immediately. UN sanctions on Iraq, US-led coalition, the Desert Storm operation, and then the war against Saddam, and the bombardment of Baghdad and most of Iraq, the destruction of its infrastructure, roads, airports, bridges, and even after Kuwait was liberated in February 1991, the sanctions on Iraq remained, and the entire country went from relatively rich into poverty within the 6 months. And then from 1991, for the next decade or more, Iraq witnessed one of its really worst chapters of poverty, of dire need, devaluing the Iraqi currency. The Iraqi dinar was worth $2, and then it collapsed immediately. Middle-class Iraqis had to work 2 full-time jobs to bring food on the table. The state was able to bring necessities and to distribute essentials, especially essentials of food on all Iraqis, including the Palestinians. But the 90s, this 10 years, this decade, is marked by dire need, by poverty, by isolation. Iraq was isolated from the world. The only border that remained functional was the Iraq-Jordan border, because Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, airports were also out of service. There's only Baghdad-Amman road that remained open to just keep Iraq alive. And the Iraqis found it extremely difficult to travel. First, they can't afford it. Then the Arab countries and the rest of the world made it very difficult for Iraqis to get a visa. And then even internally, the Iraqi government knew that if they allow travel, that they will be bleeding their society. So they added more harsher conditions for Iraqis to be able to travel. And the Palestinians of Iraq were basically a tiny little drop into this big ocean of poverty and dire need and destitute. So the 90s is marked by basically starvation, hunger, need, and isolation. Iraq also was isolated by telephones, because the Americans destroyed the infrastructure, including the switchboard. People who had relatives in Iraq couldn't just call them. And here I'm talking about landlines. This is before satellites and before mobiles and before internet. Iraq was completely or nearly completely isolated from the rest of the world. The Palestinians of Iraq also, like the majority of Iraqis, were caught into this misery. Next week, we will talk about what happened to them after 9/11 and after the fall of the Iraqi regime. Thank you for being with me, and until we meet next Saturday, this is Yusuf Ahmed Rimawi wishing you the best of time and salam.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.